还能这样抱气温温的去受。
Good afternoon. I volunteered for this session because it would be somnolent, wouldn't ask nasty questions, and might even stay away from the period. The topic. Rigetti, Georgi Rigetti, or Rigetti if you prefer, the composer, wrote a poem symphonique for 100 metronomes. And it lasts as long as the longest metronome ticks away. They're all at different rates, one at different amounts. They banned it on the second showing, showed a football match instead, because he was a joke, really. But we come back to him. However, the metronome is a typical measure of time and timing, so I felt certain to have it at the beginning. I'm afraid I have lost the soundtrack using a different machine, but I assure you it just consists of sundry clicks until the end. If anyone wants a recording, I can give them one. The other thing I wanted to get out of the way was the equation of time. You're all familiar with the equation of time. We do have an equation of time. It's not very helpful, in truth, except to those that find it helpful. That's it. That's the equation of time. And it's talking about the time interval between the sun at its highest and 12 noon around the world on different days of the year. Because time is an awkward thing. We talk about time, time's difficult, and all the rest of it. But actually, people have got views of time of various, you know, different sort of mechanisms of time, most of which spring from antiquity. This probably didn't go that far back. But the interesting irony, if you've read it on the page, is that in 1847, British Railway decided to coordinate time across the whole of what they had. Well, they are in those days. The irony is that they managed to screw up quite considerably over the following 150 years, didn't they? However, bless them in their old manifestation, they thought that was important to keep the trains on time. So we'll let that one go. Now, I put some sort of statements down there, which you may or may not disagree with. But they actually will be addressed during my the presentation over the next sort of 30 minutes or so. And some of those things have been already examined, looked at, as being quite sensible. Some perhaps not. I don't think we'd argue about, well, we might argue about every single one of them, but the fourth one down, it was referred to, I think, in Alice's speech about the minimum minimum of time. And it does exist, Planck time, we'll come back to it. It does exist for a number of purposes. My background is engineering, not quantum physics, and engineers don't believe in compact time, because we can't measure that. But we can measure something else. I'll mention that later. The second, as a unit of time, an interval of time, is something that's all invasive. We talk about things per second. We talk about miles per hour, true, but an hour is just a number of seconds. We'll come back to that. And the last bit, the infinity and eternity. Well, infinity is not eternity, and there's not just one eternity, there's several lots of eternity, and lots and lots and lots of different infinities. And we have to mention those because all of those are connected quite closely with time. So, a potpourri of facts and fictions. We'll see where we go. There are contestants in the battle for mind about what time may be, and there are, well, there are seven there, deadly sins. I did not put engineers. That's where I'll pass such debates. However, more or less, that is what the contestants, or the authority, being an authority, time means. Well, there's seven of them there, aren't there? The one I find most fascinating is the theologians, because they actually, in the 1700s, led by the Jesuits, declared the consideration of infinitesimal space and time to be a heresy that was formally declared and had the anathema of the church. It's a bit like when I was in Missouri declaring that pi was equal to 3.1, 3.0, or whatever it was they tried to do. Didn't succeed, of course. So we have these different views, none of which are necessarily wrong, none of which are necessarily right. You make your own mind up at the end. And we'll touch on a bit of all of those, I suppose, as we go through. I was in China for most of September, an interesting holiday, the way it's typhoon in Hong Kong, where I fled, going to Shanghai. Now, you must understand, by train in China, you book a berth, and it is luck, or not luck, who you share with, unless you book the whole of the compartments. I just booked a two-seater, because I thought it was nice to have a toilet somewhere near you on the train. And it turned out I was down to share with a very attractive young lady, but in the end it turned out to be a 65-year-old Chinaman. However, he was a very interesting elderly gentleman, and I told him I was coming here to talk to you about time, and he said, "Time! Very interesting. Yu Zhao means space-time. It always has been. They do not separate out space from time. And they only separated them out in their language since the 4th century BC. Now that's pretty damn good. Whether they understood the complexities of space-time that Alan introduces to us is a different matter entirely, of course. And I'm afraid I haven't really studied any, no, I'll be honest, I haven't studied any Chinese philosophy. But he would act quite lyrical on this, and it's worth noting, I think. It's an interesting thing. Now, occasionally, as I was doing this preparation, I came across what I thought was an interesting thing. So every so often, there was a slide called another interesting thing, which may break up the flow of the argument, but I think it's interesting. So there we are. Yo, yo. Interesting. Space-time in China. Okay. Time as a dimension. Now, we're going to get into the meat of it now, I suppose. I don't start Doctor Who, and I wrote that before this morning's lecture. I'm not even starting with T-symmetry considerations, but I might mention it a bit later on. But there are dimensions that govern the way we look at the world and the way we interact with the world, and there are seven fundamental dimensions. I don't mean the three dimensions of space and plus the one dimension of time. I mean the dimensions. That have, as one email was put out to us all, I think, about the people, the SI people who are debating what the mass of the Earth, or a kilogram should be. They've been sitting, today, I think it is. But there are seven fundamental dimensions. And of course, one of them is, in fact, time, TV time. And any SI unit of measurement, pressure, density, anything you want to think of, speed, and so on and so forth, may be represented by a product of these seven dimensions. Sometimes they don't appear because the product is to the zip power zero. And there they are, the seven fundamental dimensions of our universe that we interact with daily. The ones in red involve time, our consideration of what time is. They involve time. And you'll notice they all are red. Every single of those dimensions, from mass down to luminous intensity, involve time. You'll know most of the abbreviations anyway, like kilograms and seconds and meters and so on. I put in very small print because I wanted to fit it all in for the foil, which you may not be able to read, but every single definition includes time, usually in terms of a second. So, for example, the mass that they've been looking at recently used to be a lump of metal in Paris. Well, we've never really trusted the French. We found out that the kilogram has been changing by a minute apart, something like that, every year. Well, that's the French for you. But the new one is going to use Planck's constant. We'll come back. Time is a second, and it's measured as, you know, oscillations of cesium atom. Length is a meter. Now, we used to be good in the old days, the yard was always the length of the King of England, or really monarch's nose, to the middle of the end of the middle finger, like that. That was the English yard. Always. Never changed. It was always that distance from nose to finger. Now we've got new looking plank or something. But that's been changed, of course, and it's a number of things that happen in a second. They all have a second, at least a second, in their definition. Time is pure, is particularly invasive here. And I can take any unit and consider it as a constant, times a product of all these bits and pieces, where the powers indicate how much of it you mean, so to speak, which can be nothing. it may be too small, but because all these files will be available afterwards, they'll be issued as a whole presentation. So, our fundamental constants in the universe, and they are considered fundamental, and they are considered constants, are above the dotted line there. Planck, you've heard his name. The other great men, Boltzmann and Mr. Gravitational, have been there. And Elizabeth Speed in vacuo, all contain a T. The constants contain a T. So the dimensions of Planck, mass, length squared, over time. Gravitational constant, mass, length cubed, or sorry, mass inversion, length cubed, time squared. Speed of light, funny enough, we know it as meters per second or centimeters, whatever, miles per hour, length over time. I put in the gas constant because that's dear old Boltzmann and I'm very fond of him. We come back to the kind of probabilities associated with entropy later. And we always put in entropy because time is always considered the measure of disorder of entropy and so on and so forth. And you'll notice that is mass, length squared, over time squared, over temperature. So, whatever we do, whatever we look at, whatever we measure, however we measure it, time is always there in some part. Time, in terms of the definition that we've been using here, which is basically the second, which is also being looked at as to whether or not we're measuring a second consistently. Now, whether or not we have a philosophical approach, we have a physical approach. And that's that time for change. That happened to the got over the last few days, including today, I believe. And it says the International System of Units, informally known as the metric system, the way in which the world measures everything from cat food to the cosmos, will change the definitions of the fundamental dimensions of measurement. And the dimension of time is included. So whether we consider it the abstract, somewhere underneath all that, we're measuring time with a clock of some sort. And how we make sure that all the clocks agree is being changed. Another interesting thing, since we're talking about the second goes back a bit. Why is it a second? Well, what was it, nearly a thousand something years ago? It was defined as a part of a day, and they had thirds and fourths. Now, the Arabs were very good at this because, for no other reason, they really needed to know when to pray. Very important to them. Therefore, they spent a lot of time developing clocks and timing mechanisms of various sorts. And then we caught up with it in Western Europe, and it was the part of a minute, the second small part of an hour, but we left the thirds and fourths out. And of course, 1 second, as you all know, is that number of cycles of using the atomic clock. I could have put a fourth interesting thing down there, and that is the greatest part of the radioactive output from Chernobyl was radioactive cesium. As it so happened. And people say, well, is it going to last a long time? Well, yes, it is, you know, 133,000 years ago, it's half life. You'll see why that's interesting. So we got the second concept out of our history, probably because it really was time to pray. We caught up a bit later, and it is called second because it was the second part of the division when they went down from days through to hours and so on. So the second, the word second, has no particular meaning, but its size has its physical measurable size. Now we've got to have a bit of maths in here. We've always got to have a bit of maths somewhere on the line. And I'll start with that little quotation from Anaximander about you study change not by studying things, and therefore goes back to the idea of motion being the most important. And Newton's classical equations of motion, whether or not you're mathematicians or not, you probably know things. And we're stuck with that because everyone likes Newton. And anyway, in the macro world, it works, especially when you receive the speed ticket. Don't start closing plank time. It's in a copper that's just stopped you. Do you know what speed you're doing? Yes, sir. I've been doing so many plank, whatever, links per mile, or whatever. So we've got the normal equations, and the second and third, I've got a thing on this, if it works. No, it turns it off. It should work. I'm sure it does something. No, I don't do that either. There we are. That is velocity. The V is velocity. So that's, I don't know, let's say feet per second or meters per second. There's meters per second. On that one, of course, it's just meters, but in there is time and time squared. Those are just the equations that they put together. We haven't forgotten them. It doesn't matter if we don't often. This is the macro world I'm talking about. And we do need to appreciate things called differentiation and integration, because we are very interested in rate of change of distance, because that's what velocity is, miles per hour. And we're very interested in the integration, because the distance travelled in time t, etc. Whenever you see a sign on the motorway that says average speed 50, yeah, we've seen that, they don't tell you the distance over which they're taking the average. So in truth, you can say 50, pop, I know it's a mile, I shall drive at 70 miles an hour for everything by the last yard. I'll stop and have tea and a sandwich until I wait until the time's up. I carry on driving, and they can't nick you because average for that mile is still 50. If you can. So it's useful to know your integration in the course. Yes, Your Honour, but if you would like to integrate velocity over the time, you'll find out that I haven't broken the law. He'll let you off, guarantee. But it does show, quite simply, that time and motion are interlocked. Motion really will depend upon time rather than around, of course. But that is a little bit of maths for starters. We've got more maths later on for those that are eagerly waiting. Okay, the heart of the matter, maybe we get to sort of quantum considerations, and then philosophy. Classical mechanics says, really, that the thing of time does exist. Address that, really. It can be formulated through time in mathematical terms as any other variable. Whatever variable you want, keys per packet is a variable. We can, however, define, and we do, casually, every day, define time, the temporal variable, in terms of other parameters. I'll give you a clue. My hand's on my watch. The location of the hands is another parameter for telling you something about time. So, temporal variable, what time is it? Defined in terms of where the hands of my watch are pointing. Velocities may be compared with no time or direction of time, they are just velocities. When we talk about vectors, that begins to introduce the concept of direction, but slightly differently. And analyses only ever compare the motion of an object to the motion of another thing, which hands, swings of pendulums, we'll come back to those two, of course, or wiggly wobbly bits of a cesium atom. So there's no reason at all to think this extra time thing needs to be accounted for, or we just do. Or we're mapping something else and doing it quite casually, all of you, every day, arbitrarily, without thinking about it. And yet, we can all survive quite happily. So, the consequence of that, I suppose, is that the time variable is not actually required. What is required is variables that will explain what time is to everybody else. And to look at the things that we see are changing, the motion, if you like, of those things that change. In 65, this particular equation, Wheeler DeWitt, purported to write a thing about quantum gravity that was written without any time variable, but taking time away from that. Well, I put a little asterisk there because I read that it was disavowed by one of his fathers. I never actually said which one it was, as far as I can remember. It was rather ill-defined anyway, never empirically tested, but it did try to allied quantum mechanics and general relativity. It had a purpose in life, and it didn't really need time. I suppose it's not dissimilar from the redefinition of the kilogram, not requiring a concept of mass. We're going back to a Planck's constant, which, okay, has a bit of mass buried in the dimensional analysis of it, but in essence is, you know, not dealing with a lump of metal that weighs something. So, since all the functions we've looked at, the constants, and the couple of other threads of constants, do contain the dimension of time in their dimensional analysis, how come we can go around and say, okay, well, fair enough, we can do something without time? It does seem to be a little bit of a contradiction somewhere in there. Now, these are hands-on dials. That's a clock face, and there's a pendulum. Purpose at the moment, that's my grandfather clock pendulum. I'm playing around with trying to get it to tick properly. We can define a thing, a time variable, if you want to call it that, but another variable, let's call it tor. It's not a physical parameter, I'm not measuring anything with tor. What I'm looking at is tor being described by two things. Where the hands are in a clock, which is to do with upwards or tailing, and where the pendulum is and it's swinging. Now those have a relationship to time, in that the clock, you know, and the pendulum, you know, and tor doesn't have a physical representation anywhere at all, other than being associated tor one with a position and a position. That's all. So we're moving away to a rather more abstract thing, and treating time like we would any other variable and parameter in a mathematical analysis or a mathematical equation. That's just the same picture up top. We don't need the time variable per se. What we need is a theory of variables that change. Don't know what those variables are. And they actually described time. See, first of all, we'll come back to time in a moment. But provide a continuous definition of when. Because your time is often, when do I take the egg off the cooker? You see, this morning at my breakfast, left hand brown eggs were 5 minutes, right hand with the white eggs 7 minutes boiled. You can choose colour coded, you know, the how long they've been boiling for. Didn't have to say 7 minutes, but just say brown. How long were your eggs cooking for? Brown. You know the time. So they provide a continuous definition of when. When do you take things off? When do I meet you? 12 o'clock under the clock. When the cuckoos fly east, I'll meet you in Zvent, you know, or something. But the idea is that there are some other universal thing with the flow of direction, which all things can be compared, which shouldn't be too many crazy, may be nothing other than an unfounded idea. Now, since we've had a look at the validity of the concept of time, does it really exist? Can you take it up and measure it? When you say time, what do you actually mean by time? What is time that's gone past? Show me a bit of past time. Tell me what the characteristics of a thing called time is. I cannot find them. I can find the characteristics of a pair of shoes or a red pullover, but I can't find the characteristics of time. I can't. Maybe someone can. So there we are, a theory of variables that change. Thus the problem of time. Problem of linking apparently directional classical time, someone talked about the arrow this morning, with apparently bi-directional quantum time, we'll have a look at that in a moment, may not be a genuine problem. It only arises from the incorrect idea that time with a bi-directional may exist. So as the old teaching tale from Zen Buddhism is, you cannot describe the vase without referring to the vase, but the cleaner came in and smashed the vase, and therefore dispensed the problem entirely because there was no vase to debate. I like that idea. But here, of course, when you're talking about the hard mechanics of mathematics and the softer philosophy, I don't mean it's not rigorous, I mean it's more wordy, should I say, they might coexist, even if it's not yet quite happening. Mathematics is coming towards it. And I suppose the real bridging place is sort of around to do with quantums, or quanta, I should say. So we've got some concept that time, we don't really need to know if it's 3 o'clock. It might be, I'll meet you when the cuckoos fly, or I'll meet you when the big hand points to 7. You can still do the when bit without referring to a specific time base. I knew you were waiting for it, and here it is at last, plank time. I shall just pause while you memorize it. Anyway, theoretically, this is the smallest time measurement that will ever be possible. Oh, theoretically. Go on, someone can say, well, half a plank. Yes, thank you very much. Well, that's not the time you need, that's half a time. Anyway, it's a time measurement. So the time unit for engineering, and I say this proudly standing as an engineer, is defined as 1024 microseconds, because we can't think smaller than that, and it has to be a power of 2 anyway. And of course, when you get Planck time, you must have Planck length, since Planck time is, of course, moving across a Planck length. It's a tiny thing. It's very much more small, smaller, much smaller than, you know, an atom. You don't need to remember that one, to be perfectly honest, other than this exists. Now, banging on about Planck time, so I thought I'd give it a chance. Well, I didn't know you were going to do that. Time dilation. Talk about compression and otherwise of time. This is the great famous relativistic formula, Lorentz Fitzgerald. And those in the know will recognize that there is a similar formula for mass, that is the increase of mass as you approach light speeds, and a shrinkage in length as you approach light speed. And quite simply, as V increases, V towards C, that becomes 1, 1 minus 1 is 0, 0 on the square root of 0 is 0, on the bottom of the equation turns the, you know, the left hand side towards infinity. So, it's quite a simple thing. I thought everyone might like to consider over T the derived the above formula from first principles. It's remarkably simple, actually, I mean, speaking as a non-mathematician, I would agree. But it was a wonderful proof of the mathematical basis on which one would consider time dilations. So we've got little bits of lump here of time that doesn't really need a 3 o'clock time timing. We've got a new definition of what time is. We've got, we could use anything else to mark out time, like distances or other variables and parameters. We have little bits of times, perhaps the smallest we ever get to is the Planck times, tiny instance. And it may have something to do with the Big Bang. So, and we've got the dilation of time, which is a function of speed, or the gravitational effect, which is intermingled. So these are all sort of little bits and pieces, which is a potpourri, as I said. But not a curious thing. We have a leap second. Did anyone know we had a leap second? Well, we do. And I mentioned one on the 1st of January 1980, because at that time I was the charge of all the inspiration instrumentation for this missile range. And I had a reference stand with the laboratory. And I had noticed from the National Physical Laboratory that there was a leap second due. And my senior rank, who was in charge of it, decided that he would advise all owners of military watches, that is, the officers of the regiment, that were they possessing a military watch, they should bring it in to have it recalibrated because we had a leap second. And 2 did turn up asking for their watch to be recalibrated for the leap second. That's who was defending our empire. However, it was a real one. And I didn't have to worry about the leap second. I just needed the instrumentation to make sure missiles didn't hit aircraft. I mean, civilian aircraft flying over there. The second interesting point is that dimensionally, of course, the formula for the period of the pendulum and its length maps T with T. Well, that's fair enough. You'd expect the dimensions to be a problem. The equation in the little box at the bottom says T is 2 pi times the square root of L over G. Oh, I made that statement. A pendulum cannot, with a period of precisely 1 second, cannot be made. And a simple reason for that is because you can't get pi. You can bring it infinitely close to 1 second in terms of its length, but you can't get a second So that's an impossible task. We always try that out at some of the things. Tasks are easy. I can vouch for the fact that I'm trying to get my pendulum to swing the rock. And it's taking me weeks to try and get a second girl. No, because your prize is the stick. So we do have a leap second because another kind of time, the coordinated universal time and mean solar time, which people are interested in from space research and all the other bits and pieces, we have to put in a leap second of this one. But they're trying to dispense with that. Quite what they're going to do instead, I don't know. The same people doing, we won't have a big mass to give you a kilogram, are getting rid of the leap second, possibly at a meeting in 2021, please. So that was another little bit of third and fourth piercing. Time and future. We love the future. And if time is sort of manipulable, maybe we can have a good look at it, if it's there. Certainly, if we have an argument that says, you know, the future is fixed, therefore, all we need to do is sort of look over the fence. So we've had a good go at it, haven't we? The old Delphic and other oracles, I still got a pack of tarot cards at home. Never worked for me. Prophecy. Oh, we love our prophets. I've just been doing things at the continuing education. The prophecies in the Old Testament. It's Nostradamus. I mean, that's post facto justification in 1910, really. Prophecy and dreams. I just mentioned dumb because that's the most famous bit, but we all have our dreams. I won't tell you what I dreamt last night, but we were standing near me. I don't think I am dumb. I hope it doesn't come true. Gambling and betting. Every time we do the racing post or do probability math, we are gambling in a sense. I'll take probability math as good as direct to do something. Anticipation is rather more interesting. We do have anticipation functions. We do have matters that look to me as though they have a cause, an effect that predates the cause or pre-times the cause. I'll come back to that. Forward planning, P6. That P6 is a wonderful acronym, worth remembering. It was taught to me when I was being taught how to run Chatham Dockyard Power Station. And I threw the wrong switch at the wrong time and brought Chatham Dockyard to a halt. Briefly. And it stands for pre-planning prevents physical performance. So, I missed that, yes. And the last one is retrocausality. Wheeler, we met here before. Now, human cat, people will know much more about them than I do. I can only mention that Emmanuel Kant was born in Königsberg, lived in Königsberg, was baptized in Königsberg, didn't marry in Königsberg, went to school in Königsberg, in the University of Königsberg, and he died in Königsberg. In other words, he didn't move more than 10 kilometers from Königsberg. I met the stories too, very unimpressive as well, I think. For a man that went nowhere, and back to he's had quite a large influence. He should have gone out and lived a bit, I say. However, we mentioned Wheeler for that previously, and I think for those that are going to ask the question, there's the answer. That's the absorber theory, okay? I'll leave that up. I don't know. But it's quite more, I will actually draw attention to two things. In the small print, it says the total field is retarded and causality is not violated. And the other one is up the top. Oops. Let me go back. Up there. They considered all the charged particles present in our universe and assumed all of them to generate time reversal symmetric waves. Now, I'm not saying that was right or wrong, it's an assumption. But it's interesting, they were looking at time reversal. Okay. Not surprising it comes under the heading looking future as well. So there is something, and the match is there. I don't understand that. It's like reading Russian. I can read Russian, but I have no idea what I'm reading. But it's there. So I have to do something on causality. I'm not going to read that, of course, you can read that yourself. But I do believe in cause. And effect, and no effect without cause. I'll just put that on the floor, rightly or wrongly. And the reason I'm doing that is a lesson for me. Because I've spent most of my professional life being given a problem and expecting to deliver a future solution. And I have to do that effect, that change of state. And I have to do that by figuring out how to get from A to B. And I have to say to somebody, and B, the future solution, will look like this, and I will deliver it by then. Now, these are not, I don't know, I'm at the dinner by 8 o'clock. It is, I will deliver something. Well, I have to deliver the e-passport. I was called in to bail out the manufacturer, design, manufacture, and production of the first 100,000 e-passports, because we had screwed up, and the Americans were very prosperous. And I have to say, I will give you these passports, 100,000 of them, with 85% probability in 14 months from now. Now that's going to be building two factories, importing the complete manufacturing equipment from Japan, where it's been built, completing the design and security parameters for the chip, etc. So, activities, duration, outcomes, sequence, estimation of contingency, probability of completion on time, were all part of what was a plan. That's all it is. But I'm back here, ready to make my presentation, and I've got to tell them what the future is. Time, built-in contingency, etc. This is common all the time. We accept probabilities, we accept forecasting, whether it's the dogs have been kind to me on the racetrack, or, yes boss, I'm going to deliver this to you. And that is what it looks like. And here, you won't be there, but here it said that on the 11th of May, or 11th of April, sorry, I will start this job, and I will finish it, this particular period, by September, 2 years hence. We were a week late. Somehow, we could tell the future. I had another one, and I had to take the person in front of the boss, because after a year, we were 5 minutes late, literally 5 minutes after a year. And my young man said, very pleased with himself, he was a Scottish planner. I said, he's late. So the boss, fortunately, paid up again, and said, you were late. I said, I was 5 minutes late, boss. He said, I asked you if you were late. He said, no, you were late. I signed a bill. And at that point, he knew we were down in tears. He was 5 minutes late after a year. That is forecasting in the probabilistic world. We do this routinely. And everything has a start date, a finish date, built-in contingency. Everything is looked at the probability of delivery against normal statistics. And it gets a bit busy. And that's just a fraction of the plan. And that included, this was a different job. It included all sorts of things. But it was European wide, that was a job. And it's worth £6 billion. £6 billion. We'd like to see. Oh, and we had a general election in it, which meant the ministers to persuade. So you build in contingency, you build in probabilities, you look at the times, you look at the forecast, and everything comes down to something of measurable time. So whatever we may believe is theoretical often has a physical and actual basis and an empirical set of results to allow you to say, well, I may not know what it is, but I can handle it. I don't know what my cat is. Stupidly, yes, but you know, I just like my feet. So let's have a look at a fifth interesting thing, because it's interesting things keep cropping up. And this is an isochronous curve. It looks suspiciously like a catena, which you've seen every day as you look at the wire, telegraph wire hanging there. And it has a property that if I was to create mirror imagery, just have this sort of bowed curve. Wherever I place a marble on, say let's say both sides, and drop it. Wherever I place the marble, it will meet in the middle. And hopefully, maybe I do this one. Hopefully, it'll show you what I mean. I can leave the marble at the top where the blue one is coming down, and at the bottom where the yellow one coming down, and by the time you get to the bottom, of course, the picture there, the marbles will be. They all arrive at the same time. That is an isochronous curve, which says, on a simple curve, the marbles will behave in a way such that no matter what distance they have to cover, they will always cover it at the same time. And that's a rather interesting shape. And it's sort of counterintuitive. I mean, it's only interesting. Probably has some application somewhere. You see, the kind of circuit does, otherwise you wouldn't be able to hang wires through the telegraph poles. But that's an interesting one. Time could be measured, but not by distance in this case. Or always by distance, because no matter where you start, it comes to the place. Down the bottom, but not from the top. Other interesting things, and this is again, coming back to something you mentioned before. On the left, down the bottom there, is a Dirac spike. A Dirac spike is a characteristic of a nuclear explosion. In fact, there's usually three pulses that come out of a nuclear explosion. But on one of them, typically like that, there's a very sharp, high powered spike. The electromagnetic pulse, everyone says if the Russians want to take out our sat-navs, all they do is explode on the outer atmosphere and pulse to take out satellites. It's a very real thing. If you take that, that's time along the bottom. So it's a pulse, not time. No more pulse. You can play around with it mathematically, and you end up with that shape. And that is time along the bottom as well. And it's not just a zero, and the pulse is a zero. Look, it starts way back before the pulse. That is mathematically correct. Now, if you can't go out there and hang about somewhere on the off chance that an atomic explosion will occur, and expecting to have to go to a 3 weeks' notice, I tried to sell the idea, and I couldn't even spot the fallacy of the argument, so I thought I couldn't use them to provide me the equipment that I needed. But it is an interesting thing that mathematically it says that if you take this, the spectrum associated, frequency spectrum associated with this time pulse is basically flat. All frequencies are there. You put it through a bandpass filter, you chop it out, you get this thing called a sync pulse, which oscillates, rings, and it starts when t is less than zero. Interesting. Anticipated function. The one on the right is an interesting idea. It's a fractal curve. It's when you complete it, that is, you take each slide and you turn away on my other kick, each side, and so on and so forth. You carry on. It becomes an infinite length, sitting within a finite space. You can have other curves, there's a whole family of sophisticated curves, it's hard. But they're space-filling curves. That's not a space-filling curve, it merely is just a long edge. But you can have space-filling curves, curves that to infinity, are infinitely long, therefore to traverse that curve would take infinite time, and yet in physical space. So, measures of time, etc. Information theory and signal data analysis. Turing's computing problem is only of interest in the sense of time, in that he comes to a conclusion there are certain programs that would take an infinity to run, i.e., it would never, the runtime would never finish. It would just keep going and going. And he proved that for some kinds of programs, it would never be possible to predict whether or not the program would ever finish. There is an uncertainty about whether a computer program would ever finish. Runtime changes it infinity. The rest of it I'll leave for you to read as a conscious of time and things. Time reversal symmetry. It is a theoretical symmetry of physical laws, but it does distinguish between mathematical and physical process. Dynamics of the process remain well defined in the sequence of time states is reversed. But deterministic process, yeah, if it satisfies the same dynamic equations under a change in sign at the time. Then, a bit more complicated, a stochastic or probabilistic process has the same statistical properties if time reverse data is introduced and so on. So if we're talking about reversal in time, i.e. going back in time, we need to consider these things if we're going to do it in the actuality. Thermodynamic process can be reversible or irreversible depending on the change in entropy. You knew that word. It is the dynamic, thermodynamic element. And it does suggest unidirectionality of time. The rest of it now we'll look around, but the second one up at the bottom, why do hot things pass to cold things and not the other way around? Boltzmann said, by pure chance. We're back to probabilism. the probabilistic nature of the random molecules in, let's say, the gas or the material under discussion. Pure chance. Someone said, if you take a ball and you dropped it, there is a probability that it would not fall to the floor, but would remain suspended under your hand. The probability is based on air molecules, low probability, gathering underneath at, you know, coincidental time to suspend it for you. Or the probability is like you. The probability is less than 1 over a billion, which is a bit like that. So, well, it seems to be unidirectional. Underpinning the parametric property is a probability. But it is a small probability. You can read it, but those of you who know, there's Chernobyl that blew up. And that is the playground that they deserted on the 26th of April. And the only reason I know that is because I was out there a few days later in radiation monitoring. That is decayed. That was taken 5 years after the explosion. So I'll just mention that the philosophy of theology, fatalism, eternalism. Eternity is the interesting one if you believe in angels and saints. And eschatology is a good one, because do we have the end of the world and the end of time? The consummation of the world? Does that time cease to exist? That's sort of touched on one before. And there are two types of eternity, lots of subtypes, and I won't go through that because I don't think I've got the time on it. But you can read that one. And time is a social construct. There we are. Last thing really to say, group of people create and maintain it. Our experiences come from thoughts. We can work within our environment because it is a social contract between us all. And the last of Thomas theorem, if you define a situation as real, they're real and they're consequent. This is Mrs. Thomas. And finally, I have to mention the Pythagoras, because that's what I do. I feel about it, but Taggart is wrong, and I don't know. I have the end of time, and there's a little pencil, there's a little metro, there's a little metro at the top, just one there, ticking away. Woody Allen said, eternity is an awfully long time, especially towards the end.
Very much. And we had
Ryan submit
over.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I completely lost myself in my enjoyment.
We had planned in a 15-minute break here, so if people want to take a break, if people want to stay on and ask short questions, then the next talk starts at 1:30. And we've got a few minutes if people
would like to start 15 minutes later, because it's going to be a lot of information in a very short time.
So you want to have a little break and then...
Yeah, I'd love to start 15 minutes later when people have a walk.
Right, and then come back for the next talk.
Yeah, maybe in half an hour less.
Right, okay. All right, so we'll take a little break then.
Thanks, Sean. Could I ask you two things you mentioned they were connected? You mentioned the Wheeler, Feynman, advanced wave, and retirement wave.
Yeah.
So if I understand correctly, and correct me if I don't. You took Maxwell's equations, and Maxwell said that it could work both ways at time. So in effect, if there's something to receive it, then it goes forward in time and backwards in time. Is that connected in the same as you showed us that Dirac thing, which I hadn't seen before, that spike? You said it went through some filters, and you had, I think you were saying, up the filters, that spike had created something going back in time and forward in time. Is that what that diagram showed us?
Yes.
Is that the same as the retirement?
They're talking about, you know, quantum occurrences. Here we're talking about macro occurrences. The fallacy in that argument is that you have to have a bandpass filter of such neatness
it's like a sharp edge on the bathhouse, that works, and that's beyond our capability. So it's a theoretical. But if you take the mathematics, and you take the pulse, you look at the frequency domain, you know, the spore edge, and then you can bandpass and reverse it, you get the same pulse, which starts T minus something. Now that's mathematical.
So is it the same as Feynman and Wheelman's?
No.
They mathematically looked at the maximum equation.
No, I think we can argue it. I would argue that it's not the same at all. The mathematics are very different. The attempt to realise that in experimental terms is very different. We're not talking about quantum anomalies. We're talking about like a radar pulse.
No.
I've only come across it when I work with radars. My atom box didn't work.
Question
for
that.
Maybe Sean, you could clarify something. In Alan's talk this morning, we learned that many successful scientific theories deny the existence of time. In fact,
say that it might not exist.
And I was listening to all that you said and thinking, well, engineers take a different view. You can't actually do any engineering without time. And then you ended at the very end by saying that time is a social construct. So are you also saying that time is not real, but you merely construct something that works for you?
No, I think that me saying, I don't even attack this that it's time is really a real thing. But the use of time is a sort of social contract in that we all agree that 12 o'clock is noon, and if I say I'll meet you at 12, it's forgetting time. Well, we can include time zones, and I know you're in a different time zone, but that is a manifestation of something which may not be a manifestation of what time is. It is just a social convenience, so that when I say I'll meet you under the clock or by the weather vane at 2 o'clock, you won't turn up at midnight and I won't turn up the following week. We'll know what we're talking about. That's the social construct. Whether time exists in itself is an argument that I've made tomorrow. I think it does, but that's a personal view. I didn't want to argue my own personal view particularly.
It's not an arbitrary construct, is it? I mean, it's about the revolution planets, we keep changing our clocks a little bit to make up for slight differences between our measurements.
True. Well, we didn't have to have the second in the beginning as 101, was it 1/6000 of a day? And the same way as we didn't have to have a meter being 1/10,000 of the pole to the equator. We have just sort of agreed on that, and that's what the second is. But where's the reality of it? And again, if someone says, time. What are the attributes of this thing that you said is called time? If I say you pull over, what are its attributes? You know, I've got 2 hours, it's made of wool. You can say lots of things about it. What's the attribute of a thing called time? I can't do that. I don't know that. I'm not subtle enough to be able to do that. It's something that we agree that I'll meet you at 4 o'clock, or I overrun time. So it doesn't exist. It doesn't exist if I wasn't late.
Paul, chiefly for a thought of Stephen Hawking, which I'm quite more generally, he's well known as the main statement that time travel existed, we've seen Jesus who came back to live. If we can generalise all that, I judge from your talk, and thank you very much for that, including about 4,000 times as much about that there are at least some formulae which govern our lives, which in theory at least would operate forwards and backwards in relation to time. So assuming that is true and extending Hawking's thought, surely we, with all the scientists doing all the jobs that they do in CERN or nuclear physics or quantum physics, we would have observed a phenomenon reversing by now, would we not?
No, I don't see why we should have. You may have, but not recognised it, I suppose, is an answer.
Well, that's fine. I appreciate there's not a definitive answer to my question.
But we're talking about going backwards in time. We're talking about going backwards in time. I'm not sure we necessarily mean. We're looking at the clock and the hands wind backwards. As I continue my forward motion in time, that is going... No, it's going forwards. Everything's going forwards, I'd argue. And backwards, I'm not quite sure what that means. It means I can go and visit Battle of Waterloo, but I have gone forward in my time to be able to go and see Waterloo. That, it is 150 years ago, that's not going back in time. That's going forward in my time, and it's there. But it talks about the existence of the past. That's a different kind of argument. Does the past disappear as you move forward? Pictures, and arrows, and trees. So it's a different argument, I think. I don't think, if they're time travellers, they probably opened the door, took one look at us, and said, God, I'm glad we got that one over us, and done with, and disappear. Much more subtle than that.
That's something as well to say that it's because of the speed of light as well. So it's going to go into the future, then going back to the past. And it's all related, don't ask me the formulas, related to the speed of light. Because you can't reach the speed of light, you had a formula there, because you encounter infinities. Your mass becomes infinite. So, and the more energy you put in it, the more infinite it becomes. Like, infinite mass, you won't move. Reaching the speed of light.
So can I restate that as saying the best science that we have probably reinforces what we would intuit to start off
with? Well, thank you very, very much.